Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. You say you hate to exercise because it makes you feel hot and uncomfortable? Imagine a form of cardiovascular fitness in which your body feels weightless and you don't get hot or sweaty. One that relieves the pressure on your knees and hips, yet works more of your body's major muscle groups than running or biking. Plus, it promotes deep breathing and may improve respiratory health and is recommended for those with osteoarthritis, high blood pressure, and obesity.
Sound too good to be true? If this is the kind of aerobic workout you'd like to try, then try swimming. The buoyancy of water reduces gravity stress on the body, so swimming is recommended for many who have difficulty exercising. The health benefits of swimming are numerous, and here to explain them is Dr. David Tanner, an expert in exercise physiology and human performance. Dr. Tanner teaches in the kinesiology department at Indiana University and is the co-author of Swimming Past 50 and co-editor of the Handbook of Sports Medicine and Science, Swimming.
Dr. Tanner, welcome to Take Care. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
It makes sense that swimming would be a good form of exercise, but you've obviously studied human performance and exercise physiology. So, in your view, why is swimming such a good form of exercise?
We've spent the last 11 years studying master swimming, which is competitive swimming for adults over the age of 18. And we, in our studies, we've looked at different physiological and psychological markers of health. And what we found in our research is that master swimmers that are serious about, that means 3 to 5 times per week of swimming, have a 20-year difference in their chronological age, which is the number of years you've lived, versus their biological age. So that's your physical function. So a master swimmer of 65 years old would have a biological age of 20 years younger than that. And that's probably the most interesting thing that we found. We also found an increase in muscle mass of master swimmers relative to the general population. Much of our aging is caused by inactivity. So any activity that you can do that will improve your cardiovascular and muscular fitness is beneficial. Swimming seems to have the advantages of being, well, it's safe. You don't have to worry about getting bit by a dog or run over by a car like you do in running or cycling. And there's a very important social factor because you're in an enclosed space and you tend to make friendship bonds with the people you train with. And we've also seen a cognitive improvement in those who swim regularly relative to the general population have higher markers in several cognitive tests.
Dr. Tanner, I want to go back and have you repeat again when you were defining master swimmer. What time commitment is that? 3 times a week, but for how long did you say?
Most master swimmers swim for about an hour, and it usually involves joining a club, and sometimes there's a coach, sometimes there isn't. But the advantage is that you belong to a group, and you get certified for the USM, United States Master Swimming, which is a national organization, and there's actually a world organization. Master swimming is really big in Europe, and it's huge here, too. You're talking millions of participants.
You know, I just want to interrupt you. I don't know how many people in our listening audience, or in general, I mean, unless you were really committed to be a competitive master swimmer, I just was curious for the average person who can go 3 times a week, perhaps, but maybe not have an hour or want to compete. I wanted to find out, really, how many minutes a week does a person need to swim to reap some of those health benefits that you were talking about?
The general consensus is now that half an hour a day of 5 days a week of some sort of aerobic exercise is beneficial. So a half hour in the pool would do it.
And what I also want to focus on is understanding the physiology of swimming, especially because of the gravity and the lack of pressure. I know that often aquatic physical therapy is used to rehab certain injuries, because of the constant resistance that the water offers. But if you weren't injured and you want to go swimming, I mean, one choice is just to swim laps at a club, at a health club that might have a swimming pool. But what are some other things a person can do, maybe to help their balance or increase muscle strength outside of just lap swimming? What would you recommend that would be helpful in that setting?
Well, as we age, we lose muscle mass. So some sort of resistance training outside of the pool is very beneficial. It doesn't have to be super heavy weights, but some sort of resistance training will retard the natural loss of muscle mass that we see. So that would be one thing. And we've also found that swimmers, regular swimmers, I'm talking recreational swimmers, in our research, we've seen a better balance, better neuromuscular coordination, even in standing, in how people sway back and forth when they stand. We see an improvement in that with those that are master swimmers. And by master swimmers, I don't mean people compete. Most of the people that belong to master swimmers don't actually compete. They just use this as a recreation fitness activity. And being part of a group makes it more enjoyable and more likely that you will actually do it every day.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And our guest today is Dr. David Tanner. He's an expert in exercise physiology and human performance, and he's the co-author of Swimming Past 50 and co-editor of the Handbook of Sports Medicine and Science, Swimming. Our topic is the health benefits of swimming. Dr. Tanner, for those who swim and get into serious swimming, it's really not just dog paddling in the pool. It's swimming up and down lanes, and often that involves rhythmic breathing. You put your face in the water, you turn your head, you breathe out, the way we learned when we took swim classes. But this does create a certain type of breathing. Describe how a person breathes during a swimming workout and how this differs from breathing when you're biking or running.
Actually, that was the topic of my dissertation for my PhD, but we're studying right now the difference between swimming and land-based exercises, and it's quite a bit different. In running or cycling, you tend to breathe in at a normal rate and then exhale quickly. So my topic was flow volume loops, and the flow volume loop of a swimmer is just the opposite. They tend to breathe in very quickly because you bring your head out of the water, so you have to take in the air quickly, and then you tend to exhale slowly while your face is in the water. So it's just the opposite of the land-based exercise. And we also find that the swimmers tend to keep their lungs fuller because that buoyancy of the air in your lungs helps you float, and floating, of course, is very beneficial. And so we see that swimmers tend to have a better pulmonary function than the general population. They have larger forced vital capacity, and all the markers of pulmonary function are improved.
All right. I have a very specific question. I'm standing at the edge of a pool. It's a lap pool. There are designated lanes for swimmers, and I'd like to start swimming, but I'm not a very good or a very strong swimmer. And I'm afraid to enter a lane because I see that the people there who are swimming, they're rhythmic swimmers, they're strong swimmers. I may slow people down. I may crash into them. How do I begin to start swimming? What's some of the etiquette that's involved? What do I need to know before I jump into that lap lane?
Well, every pool has its own criteria for lap etiquette. So what I do, I go and ask the lifeguard, what is the procedure for either circle swimming or straight back up and down swimming? If there's more than two people per lane, then you go in a circle. So you go down on the right hand side and come back on the right hand side, just the way we would drive. So the first thing to be is to ask the facility people there what their method is. And then courtesy is always important. So when you're ready to get in, you ask the people who are already in the lane, may I join you? And, of course, they always say yes. But and then you make an agreement on how you're going to swim in circles or go straight up and down.
And what about, I know that there are people who are insecure about swimming or their stroke may be off. They may be veering right and left. Are there some pools where there's a lane for beginners, a lane for a little more advanced? How does all that work? Because I will say this, having been a lap swimmer, I know it's intimidating sometimes when you start up.
Yes. Some pools do specify speeds for various lanes. Most I've seen don't. But if again, you can always ask the lifeguard what would be the best thing to do, and that would take some of your fear out.
And one final thing, when you suggest someone start a swimming program, what stroke do you usually recommend?
Most people start with freestyle, crawl stroke, although if you're from Europe, you probably started with breaststroke. So whatever you do best, but crawl is usually the stroke you see the most often. And if you're starting off, I would start with just one length at a time and not try to do too much, and that way you can change strokes at each length if you wish. And then if there's some kind of a class or something you can take, that would really be beneficial, because swimming is, unlike walking or running that we do all the time, swimming is something you have to learn, and the technique is unique, and you have to have somebody maybe help you learn how to swim better.
And for the absolute beginner who knows that they need to put on a bathing suit but they don't know anything else, what else do you recommend? You recommend swim cap, goggles, nose plug, earplugs, what?
Get a pair of goggles. That'll make your experience much more enjoyable. And not all goggles fit every face, so you might have to try a few different types before you get one that fits. If you have unruly hair or long hair, a cap is definitely a good thing. Keeps the hair out of your eyes. And then other than that, that's all the equipment you need. A swimsuit that you feel comfortable in. And that's about it. It's a simple sport.
I know it's very healthy for the body, but for the person who wants the health effects, the benefits of swimming, but also wants to lose a little weight, does swimming really burn as many calories as some of the other forms of strenuous exercise like running and biking?
Yes. Well, the energy expenditure between running and swimming is about 4 to 1. So 1 mile of swimming is equivalent of energy burned to about 4 miles of running. The issue with swimming is that there's a huge difference in efficiency. So I'm a high school swim coach, so some of my swimmers are very, very efficient, and I even see it at that age group, and some aren't. And so for the efficient ones, it takes less energy for them to swim a mile than it does the less skilled ones. And so my goal as a coach is to get the less skilled ones to be more efficient. So if you have technique that could be improved, then it's going to cost you more energy. And we're talking about for a mile of swimming is about 400 calories. So if that takes you an hour, you're burning 400 calories an hour. And that's about the same as most aerobic activities we usually consider to be about 500 calories an hour. One aspect that I thought about preparing for this talk was one issue with running is that during running, you get hot, and after you finish, you're still hot. And when your body temperature is high, you tend not to have much appetite. Swimming, on the other hand, you stay cool. You do sweat in the water, and you do get hot, but because of the conductivity of water, you tend to stay cooler when you're finished. So your appetite is not suppressed. So you have to guard against eating. You have to fight the urge to eat too much after you swim, because your appetite is not suppressed. So the calories burned are about the same in the two activities, but afterwards you may eat more when you swim because you're not hot.
Dr. Tanner, you just canceled out. You just canceled out everything. I was all ready to get a bathing cap and go, but I do not need an increased appetite. I'm only kidding. I know how beneficial it is. But that's a funny and interesting point.
Your joints will thank you, Lorraine.
Yes. Dr. David Tanner, we thank you for sharing your expertise with us. Dr. Tanner teaches in the kinesiology department at Indiana University and is the co-author of Swimming Past 50 and co-editor of the Handbook of Sports Medicine and Science and an expert in physiology and human performance. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, and I wish all your listeners many years of pleasant aquatic enjoyment.